Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just click the link in the show description to support now.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hey, why are people into that, listeners? Tina here. So this episode, Why Are People Into Puppy Play, is kind of a rerun of sorts. It was originally published in early 2016. It's now 2019. My guest for this episode is my good friend who goes by the name Yandy. And in the episode, he talks about puppy play and his identity as a leather pup. Some of you longtime listeners probably did hear this one back in the day, but for many of you, it's going to be a brand new episode. This is the only episode anyone has ever asked me to take down because of nervousness around certain people hearing it, which for the record is something I'm always willing to do for my guests for any reason. It's definitely one of the projects of Why Are People Into That to confront the stigma of respectability politics. And part of doing that is allowing people to be out about their kink or sex work or queer identities when and only when it doesn't compromise their security on any level. However, over the past few years that Why Are People Into Puppy Play has been unavailable, I get near constant requests for episodes about leather puppies and animal play in general. In fact, in the past few years, I've even started teaching a class at Pleasure Chest about animal play, which, to be clear, we're talking about humans role-playing or identifying as cats, ponies, pigs, etc. This is not about bestiality, which I consider to be fundamentally non-consensual and therefore outside the purview of this show. Got it? Good. So I recently reached out to Yandy and asked how he would feel about me taking out a few identifying details in order to republish it, and he agreed, which I'm really stoked about. So please enjoy this rerun, whether it's been a few years since you heard it or you're getting slobbered on by it for the first time. Why Are People Into That is produced and hosted, as always, by yours truly, Tina Horn. Follow at Tina Horn's Ass for updates on the podcast, as well as my other projects, including Safe Sex or SFSX, my queer sex work sci-fi comic book. Issue 1 is out from Image Comics in your comic book stores September 2019. Our music is by Vivid Windows from Oakland, California. If you want to support 5 years and counting of indie pervert media, check out the show's Patreon. That's patreon.com/TINAHORN. And now, a quick word from our sponsor. I am so stoked to let you know that every Pleasure Chest store in New York City, Los Angeles, and Chicago is having a hashtag open mixer this July. Hashtag open is a sex positive social event to celebrate the new hashtag open dating app. Come to a hashtag open mixer, a sex positive social event for open-minded folks. Join the Pleasure Chest for an evening of refreshments, discussion, icebreakers, and socializing, hosted in New York City by Sex at a Go-Go creator Dirty Lola, Life on the Swing Set podcaster Cooper Beckett in Chicago, and the dating advice girl herself, Erin Tillman, in LA. Open to folks of all genders, orientations, and relationship styles who wish to connect with others. See you there. And now, on with the show. Welcome to the 32nd episode of Why Are People Into That? The podcast that sneaks onto the couch, even though it knows it's not supposed to. My guest this week is Yandy, a kinky party promoter who identifies as a puppy. This is the final episode of our second season. In 2015, I talked to sex workers, comedians, and professors about hedonism, swinging, cruising, bicycles, butt plugs, erotica, pegging, cross-dressing, size queens, hair, and sluts. Back in the first season, 2014, I talked to activists, journalists, and artists about camming, fear, spanking, submission, porn, bootblacking, the occult, teasing, chastity, sex work, squirting, age play, high heels, size, exhibitionism, naughty nurses, prostate pleasure, sex slaves, and power. And now, wipe that drool off your snout and roll over so I can pet your belly while you enjoy. Why are people into puppy play? Hi, Yandy.
You know, I came up with that username because I go by IAndy on some sites as like an Asimov thing, IAndy. And then to make a FetLife name, I wanted to shorten it a little bit and make it a little less Googleable. And then I realized I really liked it because it's impossible to say without smiling.
And you smiled when I said it. Awesome. Thanks for coming on the show.
Thanks for coming over. I'm excited.
Yeah, it's nice to have you referencing Asimov as I'm looking around at all of these wonderful science fiction paperbacks that you have.
They're organized by topic.
By topic. Sweet. Yep. Sweet. That's great. What are some of the topics that they're organized by?
The top shelf is comics and zines. Mm-hmm. Those two are political and queer shit. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And then you've got sci-fi, fantasy, speculative fiction that doesn't fit neatly into fantasy or sci-fi.
Yes.
Linguistics, cookbooks.
You have so many interests.
I'm polymorphously perverse.
I love that. Everybody a little bit about you. So you throw the myth parties. I've been to a few. Do you want to tell the listeners who have not been lucky enough to go to a myth party what they are like and what makes them unique?
Well, so you know the feeling of really wanting something to exist and looking around for it for a long time and trying to find it and just being rebuffed and disappointed over and over again.
Yes, I do.
And then deciding, fine, I'll fucking do it myself.
Yes.
That's where Myth Party came out of.
That's where this podcast came out of. So perfect.
I was in the scene in New York for years.
In the kink scene.
In the kink scene, thank you. And I was going to a lot of the parties that existed, and I felt like what I really wanted was a party where it wasn't just, you know, anyone that came in off the street. Like, I had some idea that everyone who was there was kind of on the same page to a certain extent.
Mm-hmm.
And also that there wasn't this, like, self-congratulatory, like, aren't we the coolest, fanciest kids in our fancy fucking penthouse, you know, with our, like, 20-year-old girls in garter belts serving champagne to of the aging burner douches. Sorry, that was overly salty. I apologize.
Listen, please salt away. And as someone who has been a 20-year-old girl in a garter belt serving champagne I know the parties you mean.
So when I first joined the scene, I was really excited. I thought, this is going to be a place where I will be around people who, like, aren't going to treat me like shit and aren't going to act like they're entitled to my body and my time, you know, because in order to be a kinky person, you have to be at least a little bit thoughtful.
That is true.
It's not.
I mean,
I was mistaken.
It's, well, no, I mean.
But it's a nice idea.
I guess what I mean by it's true is that it's true that you would think that.
Yeah. So that was my fantasy. That was what I was hoping for. You know, and then I spent a little time being around, and I just was, you know, I was in a lot of shitty situations. A lot of things happened to me that I didn't want to happen to me. And I just wanted somewhere that I could play and feel safe.
So what were the kinds of things that you didn't see at other parties that you made happen at Mix?
Myth.
Sorry.
I don't throw Mix.
No, I've been at Mix all week, and also I just, yes, they sound the same, but Myth is different from Mix.
Yeah, both lovely. I went to Mix last night. I had a wonderful time.
Awesome.
I got super duper butt fucked. It was lovely.
Oh, that's yeah. That's the place for that.
It really is. That is anal central.
Right. Oh my god, those satin pillows.
Also, I was wearing this like mesh catsuit and like trying to be on my hands and knees on the satin pillows, but with the catsuit and the satin, I was so slidey. I kept face planting. Very difficult. The struggle is real.
The struggle is real. It's so real, Tina. So that's the kind of thing you can expect at the Mix Festival here in New York City.
Right. Highly recommend it.
What about the myth parties that you throw? Do you get super duper butt fucked at those? Can I ask?
I don't personally. I don't play at my own parties.
Oh, you don't get high off your own supply.
I don't get high off my own supply. And the reason for that is that I feel like there's an inherent power dynamic there that can get very gross very fast.
Oh, well, that right there is an awesome premise for a party. Do you ever feel sad that you've, like, made your vision of maybe not perfect party, but the kind of party that you would want to go to, and then you also have ethically shackled yourself?
A little bit. Yeah. I feel a little bit sad about that. But also I feel like when I'm walking around the party that's happening and I'm seeing all of the things that people are doing that like they feel safe and able to do because of all of the work that I did. Like I get all, you know, I feel all of that. I feel all of the satisfaction and energy from that just by being there and holding all of that space.
Voyeurism is participation.
Absolutely.
Cool.
Like I remember at the last party I threw, which was called Future Fuck.
Right. With the big giant performance art. Yeah, thing that yeah. was happening with the it feminist was, future.
It was at the Etley Universe.
Etley.
Which was right. It was a queer feminist futurist art installation festival thing.
Thing, yeah.
That was how they described it. and it was run by this brilliant artist named Sarah A.O. Rosner. And apparently she asked around and she said, if I want to have a play party at this queer futurist art festival, who should throw it? And everyone was like, Andy should throw it.
Oh, that's so sweet.
I know. It made me feel really good.
Awesome.
And so I was at Future Fuck, and this very dear family member of mine, that's chosen family, not family of origin.
I gotcha.
A very dear family member of mine who had come in from out of town, you know, been on like a 7-hour bus ride to just to get there for the party.
Yeah.
Who like never bottoms ever, and never feels safe enough to bottom. And I was walking through the party and I saw them in bondage, getting beat up, and looking so happy.
Oh.
And like, I knew that they felt safe to do that because of the work that I had did,
that I had done.
And because of all of the love and the care that I had put into the space.
Oh my God.
And so I watched that and my heart grew 3 sizes.
That's so great.
It was really nice.
Well, cool. And, so today we're going to talk about something that is related to play parties. In some ways.
I should stop nodding because your audience can't hear.
That's fine. So today we're going to talk about why are people into puppies, and let's just clarify that what we mean is puppy play, but not just puppy play, because puppy is more than a theme of role play or a kind of kinky play. It also is, for some people, an identity, in the way that That's being right. a daddy would be an identity, or even a gender, or being a little, or some, you know, some of the other things that we've talked about in past episodes on the show.
That's right.
So tell me about your relationship to puppy play and puppy identity.
So I would say that for me, it's sort of more of an identity than a style of play.
Cool.
And it's very hooked in to the way that my DS relationship with my captain and my owner is 24/7.
So your domination and submission, I can't talk tonight. Your 24/7 dominant submissive relationship.
That's right.
Where your captain is the dominant and you are the submissive.
Correct.
Cool. We'll talk about that too.
Okay.
But so go on.
Because, you know, I just did a class at TESS, at the Eulenspiegel Society, on puppy play. And someone asked me, you know, how do you get into a puppy scene? Like, how do you get into a puppy headspace? And it wasn't really a question that I could answer, because I'm kind of never not at least a little bit of a puppy. It's much more of a scale for me than an on and off switch. Because the way that I think about it is like, there are times when, you know, I put on my ears and I put on my tail and I romp around and I play fetch, and I'm like doing the puppy play thing. But when I'm not doing that, it doesn't make me not a puppy. Like how if you are a pianist, if you're a person who plays the piano, there are times that you're actively playing the piano and times that you're not, but you're never not a pianist.
Yeah, I like that. I like that. Well, how did you discover this part of yourself?
I sort of fell into it. I realized, well, my captain realized at one point that the way that I was reacting when we were having play that was focused around our power dynamic was very animalistic, and that a lot of the attributes of the platonic ideal of a puppy were things that really pervaded our play and our relationship.
What does the platonic ideal of a puppy look like?
So
the puppiness of a puppy,
the inherent puppiness. so the things about being a puppy that resonate for me, that are important for me. You know, it's things about valuing accessing a space of uncomplicated joy and play, and also about being sort of bottomlessly loving and being open and curious and seeking connection that is guileless and simple and based in love and play.
That's so beautiful.
Well, thank you.
I wonder to what degree the inherent way that dogs relate to other creatures based on a hierarchical system of control and power and status also might have something to do with what inherently makes a puppy a puppy.
That's certainly part of it. You know, there are a couple of different modes or modalities of puppy play. You know, the one that I do that's, you know, it's very sort of positive. It's very based in play and romping and, you know, getting scratched and getting treats and getting belly rubs.
Being a good dog.
You know, that's...
Which means a well-trained dog.
I'm very well-trained. I haven't peed on the floor in like a month.
And then it was on a newspaper.
It was definitely on a newspaper. Maybe a puppy pad.
Okay.
But, you know, a lot of people that do puppy play do it in a much more dehumanization, degradation, like, right. You're a dog, right. Eat this dog food out of this dog bowl because you're a dog,
right.
Sort of, yes. Way.
Yes. Interesting.
You know, and it's kind of like, it's like puppy play is the medium, you know, and whatever the dynamic is will play out through the medium, mm-hmm. in the same way that, you know, a flogging can be a medium, and that you could be giving me a flogging because I've been naughty and need to be punished, or right. because you have just full access to my body and can do whatever you want with it and it pleases you to flog it, or because we're just fooling around and it feels good to me, or because, you know, I'm the top and I want to be flogged and I tell you to flog me. Like the simple act of flogging is the medium, and whatever the dynamic is between the two people plays out through the medium. Mm-hmm. Similarly, mm-hmm. the specific acts and behaviors of puppy play are the medium, and whatever the dynamic is, whether it's one of positive reinforcement and belly rubs or one of degradation and dehumanization and humiliation, will play out through the medium.
Let me tell you a story that I've told other times, maybe even on the show. I remember the first time that I went to the Eagle, which is a leather bar. There are Eagles in many towns, and there's one here in New York, in the meatpacking district ish area, right? Isn't that where the Eagle is?
Yeah, it's on 27th Street.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I guess that's
all the way on the west side.
I guess that's more Chelsea, but anyway, it's like near the piers. And anyway, so it's a leather bar. It's mostly gay men there. Sometimes there's public sex there, and it just is a normal matter of course. Yandy's shocked. Were you ever super duper bug fucked while smoking a cigar on the patio of the
You know, Eagle? I have not been. I have found that the interest of the dudes that frequent the Eagle in butt fucking a boy like me is not high.
Mm, that's too bad.
Which has been a frustration for me in trying to participate in the Eagles programming.
Well, that's another podcast. I was there on puppy night one night.
I go there a lot.
Oh yeah?
Yeah.
Do you go in like puppy mode?
Yes,
oh, cool.
Yes.
Oh, well, I want to hear about that because it was the first time that I had ever been in like a public place. You know, the Eagle is almost like a membership club, but it's not like exclusive. Like you can go in and like for me as a woman who's clearly a woman, there may be a little bit of like shade thrown at you, but you know, then you gender nonconforming or women, like, you know, but then they let you in if you seem cool. Anyway, it was puppy night and there were like half a dozen full grown men walking around on their hands and knees in a public bar, behaving exactly like dogs were, if it was the kind of bar that would allow like actual canine creatures there, right? And I think that there was like a dog pen and maybe there were like friendly dog fights going on, but it was mostly just like, again, like if you can imagine being at a barbecue and like everybody's allowed to bring their dogs and like most of the people there have dogs. And so there's like humans talking and drinking beer and then there's like dogs running around underfoot, right? It was like that, except the dogs were people.
Yeah.
Acting like dogs are like in puppy space, right? And this one puppy just kind of came over in the way that a curious dog would and kind of started like nuzzling against our legs. And we were like, because of this situation and because we're like, you know, open-minded people who are like, oh, this is not weird. I just immediately went into the mode of treating him exactly like I would an actual canine, being like, oh, you're so good. Oh, you're so cute. Who's cute? And like rubbing him behind his ears and he reacted exactly the way the dog would. And it was so sweet and adorable and also like cheered us up in the way that an interaction with a good, sweet dog would.
Totally.
And it totally changed the way that I thought about puppy play because it was also just so nice that as an identity for these people, that they can get to be in their puppy mode and interact with people in a way that is not Like, maybe it's sexual for them psychologically, but it's not, like, sexual in a way that is, like, obtrusive to or explicit in the space. And so maybe later, these human puppies are going to go home and jerk off thinking about getting scratched behind the ears by me at the eagle, you know, or maybe not. Maybe it's just in a kink space and not necessarily, and even like an identity affirmation space and not necessarily sex. But for a lot of people, it's probably about sex.
In my experience at Pup Night specifically, most of the extent to which it's sexual is between the puppies and the other puppies.
Oh.
That the puppy-human interactions are, you know, they're very leather, let's say. You know, mm-hmm. they fit very neatly into the hierarchy that is inherent in the leather bar.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, there's often bootlicking involved. There's often, you know, that sort of thing that the humans feel very, you know, can, like, pet the puppies and grope the puppies and feel the puppies' bodies in the way that you can to a canine dog. But that most of the humping, let's say, is puppy on puppy, because that's a way that that it's possible to access sort of a, I feel like the word primal is often overused, but sort of an animalistic urge.
Yeah.
One of the things that I really value about puppy play is that it gives me an opportunity to, like, find the place in my head that is all of the things that are being a human.
Mm-hmm.
There's a place in my head that's dedicated to, you know, oh, I have this client that I got to write this thing for, and I have these emails I have to send, and rent is due, and I got to pay the water bill, and I should call my mom next week, and, like, all of these human things.
Yeah.
And I can just sort of draw a line around them,
right,
and put them on a shelf for a little while.
Right.
And say, I don't have to worry about those things right now. Those are human things.
Right. Dogs. That's human stuff. Don't pay rent.
Right. I don't need to worry about that stuff. My primary concern right now is this squeaky toy. And I find that really freeing.
Yeah.
Because I have a lot of stuff going in my head all the time. You know, sure. I think a lot of us do. And when a lot of that stuff is very focused around human responsibilities,
mm-hmm.
it can get very heavy and it can get very mean.
Mm-hmm.
And so taking that stuff and shutting it away in a cabinet for a little while and just devoting the entirety of your attention to a squeaky toy,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Is very, it's like a spa day for your brain.
So how is it connected to sex? For, you don't have to answer necessarily for yourself, but, like, what is your observation about the way that people then connect that space to fucking?
Well, I think, as I said, a lot of it is puppy on puppy because, you know, you're there on your hands and knees wearing, you know, a jockstrap and a butt plug tail, and someone else is there on their hands and knees wearing a jockstrap and a butt plug tail, and maybe you're having a tussle, and maybe that tussle gets a little humpy. you know, and that's a reasonable and totally predictable thing to happen.
Yeah.
For me, the extent to which my puppiness or my puppy play plays into my sexual interactions with, for example, my owner, it's not as explicit.
Yeah.
It's primarily because, as I said earlier, you know, as, you know, I am their puppy. Mm-hmm. I am always their puppy. I'm never not their puppy.
Right.
And so when we're having sex, when we're playing, even when we're doing play that's not primarily puppy play,
mm-hmm.
I'm still their puppy. They still call me puppy.
Oh, cute.
You know, I still gnaw on them and headbutt them to get pet. And so when we're having sex or when, you know, we're having sex with me as a puppy because I do everything with me as a puppy.
Gotcha.
But it's, for me, there's not a lot of, you know, here's this puppy with these puppy ears and this puppy tail. Now I'm going to fuck that puppy.
Do you feel like there is, there's a certain kind of turn on or release that some people get from, like, actually having sex while they're, like, in a puppy head space?
Yeah. I mean, I think that that there's value in putting yourself in a place where you can have sex in the way that an animal does.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah.
Where you're not worried about being messy, you're not worried about other things, you don't have your head going all the time, you're right. Just, you know, instead of being entirely focused on the squeaky toy, you're entirely focused on this cock.
right.
You know,
I mean, that's one of the great things about sex, is that you behave in a very uncivilized manner.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I think for some people, puppy play is the avenue to get there.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Because if you associate being civilized with being a human, if you want to be uncivilized, it's easier to do that if you take a break from being human for a little while.
Yeah. Do you think that folks need to have dynamics like with other puppies or humans to treat them like puppies or having owners in order to get into that space? Or do you think that people can like be in puppy space while like masturbating, for example?
Oh, that's a good question. I think it's definitely possible to be in puppy space while masturbating. I find that my favorite way of being in puppy space is in like a public setting,
mm-hmm.
at a party or at the Eagle or at, you know, an event where part of what I can do as a puppy is interact with other puppies and or humans.
Mm-hmm. That makes sense.
Because part of puppy play for me is being treated as a puppy.
Right. I mean, it does also seem like such a nice way to go into a public space to whatever degree you may or may not have social anxiety. You know, like, maybe you have acute social anxiety and maybe you just are tired and you don't know if you want to feel like you're at the party and, oh, that person's here and, oh, that person there, blah, 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 blah. But, like, if you're a puppy, there's no question about the way that people are going to... There's not,
absolutely.
Like, you're not going to have small talk when you're a puppy. People are going to fucking scratch you behind the ears.
Exactly.
And
tell you
that you're good if you're good or bad if you're bad.
Exactly.
What do you think about, like, being bad dog? Like being like people who want to be like bad dogs.
It's not part of how I play.
Yeah.
I think mostly because, you know, wrapped up in previously mentioned social anxiety is like a lot of the time I'm pretty sure that I am bad all the time, you know, and
so you want to be good for a change.
Right. And so I don't need to play with that. I already have that.
Yeah.
And so I, you know, most of the puppy play and most of the DS that I do is, you know, is sort of positive reinforcement based.
Mm-hmm.
I think I'm thinking about the media that I've seen of puppy play,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And the other people that I know that do it.
Yeah.
And I don't like to generalize.
Yeah.
But I feel like the bulk of the media that I have seen where puppy play or, you know, or the people that I know that do it, where the puppy play is focused around degradation and, you know, you're a bad puppy and you did a bad thing, is it's not in that gay leather puppy paradigm.
Mm-hmm.
It's often straight.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think puppy play has a very particular placement in the gay leather scene.
Right.
You know, and most puppy play that I've seen occurs in that paradigm.
Yeah. So in the straight scene, it tends to be more like there's a male dog and a female, like, mistress, and she's, like, degrading him and calling him, like, subhuman and calling him a dog.
Yeah. I mean, I've also seen it with a female puppy and a male owner and you know it's very, you know, you're a bad girl, go sit in the crate. But I haven't seen as much of that in the gay male leather paradigm because that's a very specific thing that's very it's focused around the same sort of things that that the structures of gay male leather are focused around. Mm-hmm. Discipline and hierarchy and
respect and honoring the hierarchy or the top. Yeah.
Exactly. And so that sort of dehumanization really is not as much of a part of it in my experience.
Interesting.
I also, you know, I feel a little about the term dehumanization as applied to this, because I think it's often used to mean a kind of degradation, a kind of being brought lower.
Right.
And like...
subhuman.
Right. And like, humans are pretty terrible, and right. puppies are the best.
Being dehumanized is like, great. That's a surgery I would like to
yeah,
have.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I see what you mean.
Yeah. And so the idea that it's dehumanizing and that's a negative thing, I don't really jive with that.
I mean, it's kind of like objectification, right? People always treat objectification like it's a pejorative, as if feeling like just a pure object or even just like a pure idea, being like reduced to an idea by sex, or being reduced to like not being yourself or not being whatever you represent, but just being completely treated like a whole is appealing for some people.
Oh, absolutely. And like, I feel like a lot of objectification play functions in the same way as puppy play does for me, where it's like, you know, going through life, like, as a queer person, as a person with social anxiety, as a person with a job in which it's hard to have tangible evidence of having done a good job. Like, if I'm doing objectification play and my one job is to be an ottoman,
and I can be a
goddamn fucking good ottoman.
Yeah, and ottomans are useful.
Ottomans are useful. Ottomans are wanted. Mm. Like, you know whether you're a good ottoman or not. And if you're a good ottoman, you have done a good job at doing the thing that your task was set to do.
Yeah.
And, like, that is hella satisfying.
It's so satisfying.
It's so satisfying.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. God, that's so true.
You know, and similarly, it is easy to know when you are a good puppy. Mm-hmm. People will tell you.
That's right.
It is hard to know when you are a good human.
That's right.
Like, to the extent that that's even a meaningful thing, you know, and when you have a lot of angst about that, like, am I a good human? I try to be a good human. I don't, but like, I have no way of knowing in a concrete way, like, yes, you are a good human. It's not like that when you're a puppy.
Yeah.
If you're a good puppy, people tell you you're a good puppy and you are aware and you can feel it a little bit. And that feels really good.
You know, I didn't grow up with dogs, and I remember being in my mid-20s and finally sort of understanding, like, why someone would want to have a dog, and explaining it to a friend of mine, and he was like, oh, well, you finally figured it out that what you want, you finally figured out that what you want is a slave. And I was like, well, yeah. Like, once I started thinking about a dog as, the usefulness of a human slave, and how nice it is to be able to, like, control someone and order them around when they want that from you, when they want that discipline and that guidance, is something that I understood from being a top.
Totally.
And then I was like, oh... if an animal consents to be that, it would be kind of fun to, you know, to top the shit out of a dog.
Well, and similarly, like, you know, I did grow up with dogs. I had boxers growing up. You know, and the thing about boxers, they're the big squish face dogs.
Yes, yes. I love them. I love any dog that looks like a pig.
Yeah, yeah. The squish face just speaks to my heart. You know, and the thing about boxers is that they're not smart dogs.
Right.
And yet, they will love you until the heat death of the universe.
Yeah.
And I know when my owner talks about their experience of having a puppy, of having me as a puppy.
Yeah.
They talk about what it's like to have the love of a puppy.
Aww.
And how that's so different from anything a human could give, because it is so bottomless. It is so unconditional. It is so unquestioning. It's just a constant. It's just a constant well of complete devotion that you know will always be there.
Yeah, I mean, critical awareness is a curse sometimes.
Yeah. It's one of those human things. Like, yeah. If you can put it on a shelf sometimes, it's really helpful. Human
things. Yeah, and then know where it is when you need it again.
Yeah,
instead of, like, suppressing it and then it gets lost.
Oh, totally.
And then it rises up in weird ways.
It's not a good thing to not have any critical awareness.
That's right.
Unless you want to actually, like, enjoy media ever.
Or to know the difference between humans and dogs. But, right, that's why we play with these things.
Right, right. I mean, I feel like a lot of what we do in BDSM and in role play is seek temporary freedom from the things about our lives that are heavy, that we want to put down for a little while.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
So tell me about how puppy owner dynamics work within a 24/7 relationship.
Well, it's not very separable.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they call me puppy most of the time. We actually have to work really hard for them to not call me puppy around, like, either of our parents.
Yeah.
It's a little challenging.
I mean, it's one of those funny things that, like, could be seen as a totally innocuous pet name, if you will,
mm-hmm.
or ordinary, vanilla, run-of-the-mill pet name.
Maybe.
But also, you both know that it's not, so it doesn't feel right.
Yeah, well, it's, you know, the way we framed it is, you know, have you read American Gods?
Oh, yeah, by Neil Gaiman.
Right, so yeah. Shadow's wife calls him puppy in Cute. That, and so we've been trying to frame it as, like, an allusion to that.
Nice.
For the purposes of parents not being weirded out.
Yeah.
But, you know, a lot of how we communicate in our day-to-day interactions are using the language and the communicative medium of puppy owner dynamics.
And is there ever any training in the way that there's training between a human owner and an actual canine dog?
Well, they taught me how to balance a graham cracker on my nose.
Wow. Really? Effectively?
Yeah. It's you can get Scooby Snack graham crackers. They're shaped like dog bones. You can get them at Target.
Cute.
And so they taught me to balance that on my nose, and they snap their fingers and I can eat it.
So you've learned some tricks.
I have a few tricks.
Yeah, so that's positive. But are you ever a bad dog? Do you ever need to get, like, wrapped on the nose with a rolled up newspaper?
They have authority to wrap me on the nose with a rolled up newspaper when I do certain things that are. Okay, to explain this, I have to explain a little bit more about how our 24/7
If you're comfortable,
works.
I would love to hear more.
So one of the reasons that 24/7 works for us, and I say 24/7 as a shorthand, meaning, you know, a DS dynamic that persists through 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, and is not isolated to the times when we are naked.
Right. So it's not just a sex dynamic, and it's not just a play party or dungeon or
That's
scene
right.
dynamic. It's when you're in the produce aisle, it's when you're Netflix and chilling, it's, like, all the time. Right.
Right.
Cool.
Exactly. And one of the reasons that it's really valuable for me is that my self-preservation instinct is not great.
Hmm.
And if I were in charge of taking care of me, I would do a terrible job.
Hmm.
And so they're in charge of me not, like, starving to death by accident or staying at work until 11 p.m. every day. Like, those are things that I don't do because I'm not allowed to do them.
Right.
Because if it were up to me, I'm not very good at taking care of myself.
Right.
And so the captain knows that, like, if it's 11 p.m. and I'm still at work, they can bop me with a rolled up newspaper and say, stop that, come home and go to bed.
Yeah. You know? And you have to do it.
And I have to do it. And, you know, similarly, if I've forgotten to eat for 9 hours, they can say, puppy, let's get you a treat.
Yeah.
You know, so it's not exactly me being a bad dog, but it's more that, like, there are certain aspects of being a functional person, that dynamic allows them to enforce for me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's for your own good.
It's totally for my own good. You know, and in that, we really frame our power dynamic as structures for mutual care and interdependence.
Cool.
You know, and so it's not like if we weren't in a 24/7 puppy owner DS thing, they wouldn't be able to say, hey, I noticed that you haven't eaten all day. How about that? But we've talked about it, and I've said explicitly that I'm comfortable with them having the authority to tell me what to do and to sort of override my own self-destructive instincts in certain cases. And so it's something that we do on purpose.
Cool.
You know, and similarly, as part of the service, me being in service to them, part of the dynamic, you know, I have the authority or analogous word for, you know, being on the bottom, to, you know, notice that it's been a while since they've eaten or they seem to need a cup of tea, and just sort of gently put it at their elbow and say, in case you were wondering, if there's a cup of tea right next to you, there is. I'll just go.
And that this dynamic works really well for the two of you.
Yeah, I mean, we just had our 5th anniversary.
Like, oh, mazel tov.
Thank you. It's been incredibly valuable, both for helping me grow and sort of start to believe that there's something in me worth taking care of.
Yeah.
And also that, like, it's really, even if you're someone that has a hard time feeling loved, it's really hard to not feel loved when you're a puppy and you're getting belly rubs and you're, you know, you feel totally owned and cherished.
So what kind of puppy are you?
I am a squish face puppy.
Mm-hmm.
I'm in the sort of boxer, bulldog, floppy ears, lots of drool, careens off of furniture sometimes. This is a challenge, you know, because a lot of the puppy hoods and masks that exist.
Oh, yes. They're a particular kind of breed.
They're like Dobermans or like German Shepherds. They've got the pointy ears.
Right.
And they're kind of like, I am a big dog that will bark at the postman. And I'm like, no, I'm the kind of dog that, like, gets their face stuck between the cushions of the couch. You know, so none of the masks really are the right breed for me.
Do you make things that feel like affirming to the puppy that you are?
I have a pair of ears that I got at the Halloween store.
Nice.
And I have the square peg tail, which is a butt plug with a tail. And I got the size small, but because so much puppy play is focused around like gay male leather. Like it's size small, but it's like faggot small, so it's pretty ambitious.
That's funny.
And sometimes we do a we do it in sort of a bondage way, where the captain will tie or zip tie or a saran wrap my arms and my legs fully bent, and I'll toddle around on my elbows and knees. And that's really cool because it changes the way you move completely, so you're not moving like a human,
which
takes you out of the mindset of feeling like a human really efficiently.
That's awesome.
It's really fun. You face plant a lot. And I would say if you're going to try that, get elbow pads and knee pads because having all of your weight on the point of your elbow bone and your kneecap can be really brutal.
Yeah, absolutely. I definitely know a lot of puppies who bring knee pads and elbow pads.
Yeah, I think knee pads and elbow pads are a really important safety tool for pups, along with thinking about how you communicate when you're in that space and how it's possible for you to communicate yeses and nos.
Yeah, just like any scene, especially when you're nonverbal.
When you're nonverbal, exactly.
Yeah.
But the thing is, and the thing that I find really delightful about playing with other puppies is that the communication that happens between two puppies when they're like negotiating a tussle, it's all nonverbal.
Cute.
And it's amazing.
Oh, fun.
Like, it is so effective. Like, you see these puppies engaging in this incredibly sophisticated, like, you know, you kind of go for it, but like a little, and then you make eye contact and you're like, and they're like, you know, and you can go for it, or like you kind
of might like tease and flirt a little bit, just like dogs do.
Right. It's like, there's a little teasing, but like, it's actually pretty easy for a dog to communicate. Like, I don't like that.
Right.
You know, like think about if you're dealing with a canine dog and you're like, you know, pet them in a place they don't want you to pet them, or, you know, you step on their tail. Like, it's not a secret.
Yeah.
And so
dogs aren't passive aggressive.
They are definitely not. They're actually really good at communicating.
Yeah.
And so
we could probably learn a lot from dogs.
It's just a different language. And so experiencing that, doing that, and watching that happen between puppies, it's really delightful.
Yeah. Yeah. And relaxing. Yeah. I'm sure to communicate in that way. Do you have other tips like that for ways for folks who want to explore puppy play, like the saran wrap trick and the pads? I know you're talking about the Scooby snacks. Do you have other like fun sort of like props or games or stories of great puppy play?
Well,
or scenes past?
I have a lot of opinions about toys.
Yes, hit me.
Tennis balls are always a bummer because the big ones are, the regular size ones are just too big for a mouth.
Right.
Like yours and mine. And the little ones you could choke on.
Yes. So,
I love a squeaky toy. My experience has been that if you squeak your squeaky toy too much and you break the squeaker, your owner will not fix it for you because they're glad that it's broken.
Just like with real dogs.
Yeah.
Or the neighbors.
If you are shopping for toys, if you see like a rubber one, smell it first.
Yeah.
Because a lot of rubber toys will taste extremely grody.
Yeah.
Silicone ones are best because then you can just toss them in boiling water with all of your dicks and your knives.
Right. Because you can sterilize them. Or not sterilize them. Disinfect them.
Yeah.
Different. Yeah.
If you're getting a bowl to eat dog food out of, you got to kind of put your face in the bowl to make sure it fits. Because a dog with like a long pointy nose can get their nose into a bowl that their whole face doesn't fit in.
Right.
But the way that our faces are shaped, we can't do that.
Especially squishy nose.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But you kind of have to make sure your whole face fits in the bowl.
Do you like, eating out of dog bowls?
I do.
What do you eat out of dog bowls?
Mostly cereal.
Yeah. Oh, cute.
I don't recommend eating actual dog food. I try very hard to stay away from, like when I'm talking about puppy play, to stay away from hard, this is how you do it and this is how you don't do it.
Yeah.
Because there are so many ways of doing it. And like I said, it's a medium for expressing, you know, different dynamics. And also, it is very, very not good for a human to eat actual dog food, and I don't suggest that you do it. If you, you know, cereal makes a good analog for dry food.
Yeah.
I like Cheerios because they're easy to eat and easy to clean up.
Yeah.
Because you will inevitably make a mess. I have heard tell that using canned stew,
sure,
like cold canned stew, is kind of a fine analog if wet food and like getting messy in that way is important to you.
Yeah.
Ugh,
cold stew though.
I mean, you're not.
Hey, no, I'm not yucking anybody's yum. I'm just saying.
Yeah, I don't prefer that. I prefer kibble analog. But I'm given to understand that that's the case. I also heard from someone recently that if you look up online recipes for making your own dog food, there are recipes where you can make something that's like ground turkey and carrots and, you know, stuff that dogs can eat, but is also basically human food.
What's the worst that can happen for a human eating dog food? Is it just hard to digest or?
Well, I think it's that their digestive systems work very differently from ours and need like different enzymes from ours.
Yeah, yeah.
And so because dog food is optimized to be very healthy for their digestive systems, it's not very good for ours.
Makes sense.
You might, you might get like sick to your stomach. It wouldn't be the end of the world. If it's really important to you, it's probably fine.
And some people like the degrading element of being forced to eat something that is probably not going to be lethal, but it's not necessarily that good for you and is not going to make you feel
sure
that great.
You might
and end, is like gross.
You might end up with a tummy ache. It's probably not going to taste very good. You know, you might have some GI troubles. I don't know your life.
What about, so other tips? The Cheerios dog bowl tip is really good.
Mm-hmm. There's a cafe in San Francisco called Wicked Grounds,
yeah.
And they will give you your latte in a dog bowl if you ask.
So cute.
It's so cute. The last time I was there, I saw them do latte art of a dog's face in the latte that was in the dog bowl. It was so cute. I could not handle it. It's challenging to drink a latte out of a dog bowl.
Yeah.
You don't really know, when you're drinking water out of a dog bowl, you don't really notice that it's hard because if it gets everywhere, it's kind of fine because it's water.
Right.
But getting latte all over your face and all of your surroundings is a little more noticeable.
Totally. I mean, collars are, at this point, have become such an almost like mainstream symbol of BDSM that it almost seems like redundant to even mention like collar and leash. Although I always like to put the PSA out there that there's a reason that O-rings are on the throat of a collar, which is that you should always pull someone from the front, not from the back, when the collar can press against their larynx.
That's totally true.
That is
and
bad.
Also, it's important to think about, like, if you want to do a collar and leash, if you're being taken for walkies of some kind, whether your intent is to be standing and to be led from someone in front of you,
right,
or to be on your hands and knees,
right,
in which case you do kind of need the O-ring in the back.
Mm-hmm.
The way that I do it is I have a harness, and when I'm having walkies, the harness has a D-ring on the back, and so the leash gets clipped to that instead of to my collar.
So it's like a chest harness.
Yeah.
Cool.
If you go on Amazon and you search for bulldog harness,
mm-hmm,
it will show you harnesses for bulldogs.
Mm-hmm.
And the largest size of bulldog harness that they have is 34 inches. And so if you have a 34-inch chest, you can wear that.
Wow. Is that what you have?
Yeah. I'll show you when we're done if you want. It's very cute.
Oh, my God. That's really amazing that it's really for dogs. Because they, you know, it's an art and a fashion to make leather and other material like chest harnesses, and it's very much like a part of gay male leather, and
absolutely,
and increasingly folks are making them for different bodies, and there's all kinds of uses for that, ornamental and otherwise, but that's really cool that you have one that is actually for a dog.
Yeah, it's extremely cute. It took a little zhuzhing to make it fit well, because yeah, body shapes,
sure, species,
but yeah. But yeah, that lets me be walked, have the leash coming from the back of me without getting throttled.
Cool.
I also have a collar that is, you know, those spike collars with spikes on the inside that like a pit bull, right, that people use for pit bulls that are like kind of, you know, choky and training and like a little rough. So I really wanted one of those with the metal spikes. And the captain said no, because I would die.
Yes.
And I was bummed. But
there's that whole captain taking care of you thing.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I was like, but what if I got stabbed in the throat a bunch of times? And they were like, Rocket. Rocket is my puppy name.
Right.
As we mentioned. And so you can get those in plastic, where you can have like, it's kind of spiky, but it's not actually going to like sever your larynx or whatever.
That sounds, I think I've seen those at like raves. Like, I've been to so many raves where I've seen plastic spikes, but yeah, I can see that at Hot Topic.
Well, but these are, it's the spikes are on the inside, you know, so they face
right.
Down. Yeah.
Right.
And so, you know, all of this to say that, you don't want to be inherently choked just because you are having walkies.
Right.
But a little choking, if that's what you're trying to do, is totally rad.
Yeah, absolutely. So, what are some of the other, like, puppy accessories that you like or that you recommend?
Well, a lot of people, you know, have a hood or a mask.
Mm-hmm.
And you can spend so much money on those.
Sure.
And, you know, all of this stuff, all the puppy gear, like, you can spend a bucket of money and get, like, a really nice, dedicated, like, made of leather, you know, marker
mm-hmm.
that shows, I am doing this thing, I am part of this group.
And for yourself to, like, get into that space, mm-hmm. like, when I'm wearing this, I'm not doing my taxes, yeah. I'm a puppy.
And also, like, my ears came from the Halloween store. I get my toys. I got my leash at PetSmart. You know mm-hmm. what I mean? Like, I got my elbow and knee pads at Modell's.
Mm-hmm. Sporting Goods.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, paws. Paws are another thing.
Oh, yeah.
You can get, this is what I'm saying, you can get, like, nice rubber or leather padded paw mitts that mm-hmm. are like a bondage thing. They're locking. They're padded on the knuckles so that when your paws are on the floor, you're not like fucking up your knuckles.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And
they look cute.
They do look cute.
You get them in the air.
I have a pair of, MMA sparring gloves.
Nice. Nice.
That I got off of Queer Exchange.
Nice.
That serve, they don't lock, but other than that, they serve exactly the same function. They reduce the use of my hands so I can't like do stuff with thumbs.
Mm.
They pad my knuckles so I don't hurt myself on the floor. And you know, and they don't cost $95.
Yeah. Taking away the thumbs is probably a good way to get into that.
Yeah.
You
can also just do that with a couple of pairs of socks. Just put a couple pairs of socks over your hands. It does the padding. It takes away your thumbs. You know, you just have these like paws.
Mm-hmm.
You can't see because this is audio, but I'm just waving my little paws around in the air. You know, and so, and, or, you know, or you could use vet wrap. You can vet wrap your hands,
mm-hmm.
Into paws, and, you know, so there are ways to have puppy gear where you buy stuff that is intended to be puppy gear.
Mm-hmm.
And there are ways of having puppy gear that is not that, that's, you know, it's a little more DIY, you look less fancy, you know, but it works perfectly fine.
Cool. Is there anything else that you really love about being a puppy, or that you know that people love about being a puppy that we haven't talked about yet?
The other thing is being a puppy, like when you're at a party that is not all puppies, like not Pup Night at the Eagle, but just like any party.
Mm-hmm.
You know, for at most parties, there's like an hour and a half or so at the beginning where everyone's kind of standing around being like, who's going to be the first one to get naked?
Yeah.
And it's a little awkward.
Yeah.
Nothing busts awkwardness like a puppy.
Totally.
And so if I'm in that moment at a party and I just like put on my ears and fling myself on the ground and start, you know, running around headbutting people, it just breaks all of that ice instantly.
That's so cool.
And just
gets I've totally people, witnessed that.
Gets people into that mode. Because, like, most people are really happy to be around a puppy's energy.
Yeah.
And that's true about canine puppies, and that's true about bipedal ones. Like, being around a puppy just kind of, it's joyful.
Yeah.
It's
infectious.
It is. You know, you see someone feeling that kind of uncomplicated glee.
Yeah.
And you know that you could just make their day by throwing their ball for them.
Yeah.
That's going to make your day better too. You know, and so being in that role of like everyone standing around awkwardly, I'm going to destroy that and turn it into everyone smiling and watching me faceplant and playing with my squeaky toy with me. And now everyone's having fun. I really value that. I like that a lot.
Amazing. Well, listen, are you doing any parties coming up or anything that you want to plug or let listeners know about in 2016?
I'm doing a lot of teaching in 2016. I'm doing a ton of traveling. I'm going to like Chicago and Illinois, or not Illinois, that's Chicago. Indiana, the other one with an I, and Virginia and DC and like all of these places. So if you are in a not New York place and you want me to come, I teach classes on puppy play, but I also teach classes on consent practice and community accountability, and things like that. Community response to violence and consent violations and best practices for event throwers and stuff like that. If you live in a not New York place and you want me to come to your group and talk about that or something like that, drop me a line, because I am doing a lot of that. The next thing that's coming up is January 30th.
Okay.
In Baltimore.
Okay.
At the Playhouse.
Sweet.
There's a thing called the Safe Spaces Summit.
Nice.
Where me and Tamara Pincus are talking about what it means to create or want to create a safe space in the kink scene.
Did you see Roxane Gay's article about safe spaces in the Times this morning?
I did not. I got back from Mix at 6 a.m. and so I really haven't been awake very long.
Well, you should check it out.
Okay.
But you should not regret you got back from Mix at 6 a.m.
It was a lovely night. But yeah, so I don't have my next, I just threw a party in October. Okay. I don't have my next one planned yet, because I have to give myself like a month and a half or 2 months to like to forget how much work it was before I start feeling the urge to do another one.
Self-care like a boss.
But if you go on mythpartynyc.com, there's a place where you can sign up for my mailing list, and then I will tell you when the next party is.
And how can people get in touch with you if they're interested in your awesome education about consent and community response to violence and all poly and all that other stuff?
So there's a contact page on mythpartynyc.com that has my email, my personal email on it. So if you only remember one thing, remember mythpartynyc.com.
Nice.
My FetLife is Yandy, Yandy.
Okay. Are you on Twitter?
I am on Twitter. I have a public Twitter and a private Twitter. My private Twitter, where I mostly just talk about butts and tweet pictures of the sweet potato fries that I'm making.
Mm, they were so good. And that yogurt aioli. Yeah. My God.
That's Iandy, EYEANDY.
Cool.
And my public Twitter is Andy Eyeballs.
That's right.
Because I sort of switched it around. And what else? My Tumblr is Rock'em Sock'em Rocket at tumblr.com.
What kinds of things do you put on there?
I do a little bit of writing. Like sometimes I have the occasional opinion.
you don't say.
but it is mostly, I would say it's like 60% GIFs of dogs and 30% selfies and 10% opinions.
Sounds like a winning combo. Come for the dog GIFs, stay for the political, radical.
I would say that's like my actual life. Come for the dog GIFs, stay for the politics.
I love that. Well, thank you so much for being on the show and enlightening me and talking about something that I can't imagine people listening to this and having any reaction other than, oh.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah, I think that it is really valuable to find a thing that you can do that can be a break from having to be a responsible grown-up person.
Word.
Whether that's being a puppy, whether it's being a little, whether it's getting the shit beat out of you so much you don't know where you are, like whether it's smoking a bunch of weed, whether it's going for a run in the park, like whatever it is that you can use to put your worries and anxiety and mean feelings about yourself in a cabinet for a little while.
Yeah.
Like, I really think that that's something that people need.
Cheers. I agree. Well, thanks so much, and I hope you have a great rest of your night.
Oh, I plan to. I'm going to eat some sweet potato fries.
And make some magic, right?
Yes, yes, there's going to be some magic. I got some weird plans.
Awesome. Well, thanks for talking to me.
So nice talking to you. 2, 4, 6. 2, 4, 6, 8.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.